D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan here with you. Pleased to be joined by our friend Jonathan Hutton, fresh off another episode of Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow on OutKick. Hello, Hutton. How are you?
Doing very well. It is great to be on a drive time. This is the coveted spot that Chad and I never achieved. So congratulations, guys. Willie, welcome back.
Yeah. Well, hey, Hutt, you got the 5 o'clock slot here. No pressure.
I know.
No pressure. You got to bring it. Let's have your best fastball. We need your best.
Coming up, too. On Friday.
So, Hutton, we were talking about a story at Sportico.com about NFL ticket revenue in 2024. The headline is that the San Francisco 49ers generated $176 million in net gate receipts from general seating and club seating in 2024. Conversely, the Tennessee Titans, although their ticket revenue jumped 10%, it was $81 million, which was lowest in the NFL for the second straight year. So when you hear that, what comes to mind? Is that a function of the fact that Nashville is a smaller market in the NFL? The Titans' inability to connect with fans. What comes to mind when you hear those totals?
What comes to mind is it's the exact reason why we're seeing so many stadiums being built again. San Francisco is in a cavern in Santa Clara, having been there on the sideline. And it is massive when it comes to suites, very expensive suites. I would say it doubles, if not triples, the amount. Just looking around and trying to remember what it looked like in there, compared to what is offered at Nissan Stadium. I think a lot of that revenue, a lot of the high-powered clients, the tech companies, my guess is they're spending much more money on the premium seating options than what Nissan Stadium has to offer. And that's going to change with the new stadium.
Hutton, a gigantic deal in sports announced yesterday with ESPN and the NFL coming together. The NFL going to own a 10% stake of ESPN. What is the most interesting aspect of this marriage to you? And my second question is, how much do you think this will affect how the NFL is covered by ESPN, specifically the kinds of stories that could be described as scandalous?
So the most interesting part of this is what ESPN can branch off and do with the license of Red Zone, with what they can do now for college football, the SEC. I mean, if you think about the properties that they have and the inventory that they air, they could do a college football Red Zone, which they tried to do kind of with McAfee and Reese Davis. This would be totally different with the assets that they have and the different host studios and the fact that they can go to these live games if they so choose. That's good for the consumer. That's good for me. I don't hate this like some people do, because I would prefer having 1, 2, 3 streaming services instead of 7 or 8, where I know I have to go and find the majority of football games. And football that I normally will watch and care about will be on ESPN moving forward. SEC, they've got Big 12 games, ACC, they've got college football. And the NFL, I mean, the NFL has 10% stake. So, I mean, what ESPN has done here is they have ensured that a company like Netflix or Amazon or both are not going to come back whenever the NFL opts out in 2029 of these broadcast agreements. ESPN's not going anywhere, because NFL, they have a ownership stake in the company. So why would they let Netflix engulf everything? Amazon, if they so want, Apple, if they wanted to, could pay for the rights across the board. If they wanted to, and put some of these apps, out to pasture. I don't think that's happening with ESPN. And I mean, look, they narrowed their focus. They got rid of some properties, and they have bought in on the NFL and the SEC. And oh, by the way, they're outsourcing a lot of this. They're doing that with inside the NBA. They just acquired WWE pay-per-views. They're in the streaming business, and the price tag is what it is. But if I get to eliminate a couple things and only have to watch Peacock for a playoff game, I'm better off for it, because I don't normally watch that app unless it's for football. As for how the league is covered, Adam, I don't think it's going to change all that much because the NFL already owns every channel out there, every broadcast network out there in terms of how it's covered and what is or isn't covered. I didn't hear anyone telling Tua Tagovailoa to get back out on the field. They were all very cautious about the concussions, as they should be. But that's just one example. Everyone was pushing the same direction whenever John Gruden had to resign with what happened in Vegas. Same thing with the Washington Commanders name, all this stuff. It's the league messaging that a lot of the coverage is going by what the league is doing. Because look, in the details of these broadcast agreements, CBS and Paramount just restructured ownership. That is a clause in the contract that technically the NFL could get out of business with CBS if they wanted to. That's why CBS helped produce the games for Netflix on Christmas Day last year. They're playing nice with the league so that when the ownership things happen, the changeover with their company, they're still going to have the NFL license and the broadcast agreements. And again, just going back to it, I don't think Schefter is going to change the way he covers the league. And I don't think we'll see any different on Sunday Night Football on NBC.
You may be right about that, Hutt, in regards to how they cover the league. But I think they've already showed their hand in regards to this whole collusion stuff and even the NFLPA. They haven't covered that as much. Now, they will cover, as they have been, day-to-day stuff like games during the season. But I think when you start getting into some of these sticky situations, I want to see then how ESPN choose to cover it. Do they choose to go full bore and cover it like they would cover anything else? Or will they pull back on stories? Not necessarily they won't talk about it, but they won't talk about it in depth.
Well, I mean, guys like Stephen A. and McAfee will.
But even Stephen A., he hadn't said anything much about this.
Well, but he's called out his boss before, mm-hmm. Like called him a rat. Like I don't think my point is like I don't think there are certain hosts who will cover it, mm-hmm. but I know what you're asking. What you guys are asking is it's the meat and potatoes, the digging of breaking news, mm-hmm. and I don't think there's a lot of that going on anyway right now. In regards to protecting the shield. I'm not talking about like a domestic violence case or how something's covered with concussion protocol or what have you. This is like, really the only ownership issue that we've seen covered in depth was Daniel Snyder. And that's pretty much it. Jerry Jones, did we hear much about the paternity test flaw? Mm-hmm. I didn't, Jerry Jones is on the broadcast committee for the owners. So was Robert Kraft. We didn't hear much about Orchids of Asia Day Spa when that was going down. So I don't think it changes all that much, D-Mace. Mm-hmm.
Now, getting back to the Tennessee Titans, we had an earlier conversation about some of the things that we observed today, Willie and I. Adam wasn't able to make it out there today.
I wasn't.
And the offense was pretty good, actually. One of the things that I brought up and Willie noticed, too, it's the offensive line. There hasn't been much talk about the offensive line. In my opinion, that's a good thing because we've talked about them too much last two going on three seasons. Well, really three going on four. And it wasn't good. What do you expect? Do you think this offensive line is getting better by what you're seeing when you're out there to practice?
Yeah, I mean, I think – if we're just talking about if we're listing just the five best players on this roster, Mace, mm-hmm. isn't Latham on that list? Isn't Skoronski on that list right now? Five best just football players.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have too many good ones, and so they would be on the list.
I would agree with that.
Okay. So to me, we have to see Dan Moore. I mean, that's their solution to the left tackle problem is moving Latham or the tackle problem is moving Latham back to right tackle where he's looked very good. I think same for Skoronski. and you add a veteran at right guard, now the veteran at left tackle, and the key comes down to center and Cushenberry and the injury. Like, I know the expectations are he sooner rather than later, but, I mean, who knows? I mean, I only hesitate because of what we were led to believe about L'Jarius Sneed. So who knows? That's the linchpin for me, is that rookie quarterback, you want to have your best center in there, and, you know, you don't want to be rotating guys in midseason. So, yeah, if it's solid, healthy, it's a much better year than a year ago. However, with a rookie quarterback, there are some unknowns here where there's going to be some sacks where, you know, it's not necessarily on the offensive line, but a lot was. And here's the key point. It's not even keying in on the sacks for me. It is the pre-snap penalties, the holding calls, the unforced defense, nothing to have to do with great defense, where the Titans put themselves behind the chains, second and pass, instead of second and manageable. And far too many times that happened. And I look at the offensive line and think that I remember plenty of penalties that go directly back to where the ball snapped up front. They've got to clean that up. Otherwise, this is going to be another just terrible year, because they had way too many three and outs, and it's because of a lot of pre-snap penalties. I think they had over pre-snap like 50.
Fourth most in the NFL last year.
Yeah, there you go. Down.
So you're leading me right into what I was going to ask you about. That's why I had these numbers in front of me here, Hutt. But one thing we discussed is a Sean Payton narrative that's going around the circles right now in the success story of Bo Nix, right? He did not turn the ball over that much, and he was really good last year at not getting sacked. And Sean Payton says sacks are a quarterback stat. And that got us really talking about going back through the debacle that happened last year. And we were kind of asking ourselves, because Sean Payton goes into a lot of times the offensive line gets way more blame than they should, when it really should be the quarterback. And there was a big difference in the percentage of times Will Levis got sacked as opposed to Mason Rudolph, who was much better at avoiding sacks and getting rid of the ball. And that has us asking the question, what will it look like for Cam Ward, especially in the context of what D-Mace asked, with the investment of the offensive line, you hope that you're going to get better offensive line play. How much better do you think they can get in that area?
Well, I mean, look, so far, we see various examples of just really bad rookie play when it comes to sacks. Caleb Williams comes to mind, Willie.
Yes, and who graded very poorly in college from that. And that's been, especially in comparison to Nix, people are kind of looking at that closer than they did before.
And Cam Ward is going to use his athleticism, try to extend plays. That will happen. He is facing some blitz packages, defensive personnel from some defensive coordinators right out of the gate. That is not easy. Speaking of Denver. So I look at it and think, I think it's going to be rocky to start. I don't think it looks much better to begin. But this is the mandate from ownership that they have to develop and improve over the course of the season. So this has to mature and get better. I will go back to, and again, the limited snaps I've seen in camp, guys, I do think, as bad as some of the offenses looked, Cam Ward has been on time. I don't think he's patting the ball. He's certainly not Malik Willis, where it's one look and he's bailing. I think he's confident, and he's accountable. So in all of that, you know, get rid of the football. Far too often, Levis is holding on to it. I don't know how many sacks are saved based on that, but I also know there were some jailbreak moments too. And again, that just comes down to the confidence of what you have up front. And we went through the starters up front of the offensive line. I don't see much depth. They still need another year of acquiring depth. And I do see a lot of two tight, sometimes, you know, the three tight packages. So they can be creative in how they're going to do this. They also got a bigger back in the draft. So, you know, there has to be solutions other than the quarterback just needs to ground the football. Like this comes down to, you know, Bill Callahan's there for a reason, I guess is what I'm saying.
To add context to Willie's thoughts there, Hutton, last season, Will Levis had a pressure to sack ratio of 30.4% compared to Mason Rudolph at 12.4%.
Right. Playing in front of the same offensive line in the same offense. So that tells you that Levis had a lot to do with it with the same offensive line. So here's the next question, Hutt, that I think is an important one. Everybody's looking to see how Cam Ward does. That's going to define Brian Callahan more than anything else. But I think people are also going to look at Callahan in between year one and year two of looking like a cohesive team. Certainly Mike Borgonzi is on the record with this. So we've already mentioned pre-snap penalties, red zone stuff, turnovers. Yes. They were 31st. They were last in special teams. How much of that do you think is they just don't have the horses? And how much of those categories that I'm mentioning that where you have maybe a little more control was coaching?
Well, I mean, he's not fumbling the football and throwing picks. You know, he's not missing tackles. They were really bad at tackling last year. Really bad. I'm just trying to think of examples of like they were minus 16 in turnover ratio last year.
Yep.
Minus 16. So with all that in mind, the short fields that come with that, look, Callahan, his rookie season couldn't have gone much worse. There's a reason why, like, they've publicly said, like, he and his staff have to show that they can develop what we have. And new general manager, new leadership shakeup this offseason. Willie, I mean, it's the record, I don't think, can look exactly the same. I don't think the record has to be just substantially better, but the vibe and the trajectory of this roster and this coaching staff has to. You know, he brought in a lot of staff that they did in the front office too, but it's not like a ton of coaching turnover. So, you know, how much does the changes at special teams at coach, how much does that play a factor? And just protect the football. I mean, I'm guilty of this too, and rightfully so. I mean, he deserves the blame, but like Levis for those early turnovers, the other mistakes throughout the season too are just, you know, it's the sign of a very undisciplined team. And I think the blow up that he had earlier this week is indicative of just a frustration level of knowing that he's got to show more offense than what 16, 17, 18 points per game. Yeah, that's heading down the road of 13 losses again and embarrassment, and that'll get you fired.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow joining us on the program. He will join us every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. Hutton, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll chat next week.
Yeah, I enjoy this, guys. Always enjoy doing the show with you. Have a great rest of the week.
You as well, Hutton. 615-737-1025. Back to our previous conversation about Titans and ticket revenue and things like that. There was a text that we read, and I've gone back and I've thought about it a little bit, and I have a theory that I want to share with everybody. I want to see if I'm completely off base thinking about this. I will ask Willie and Derek and all of you. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.